Yo, 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 what up, dog?
Hey, how's it going?
Were you shocked? Your pause was a little bit.
I was like trying to figure out if we're recording or not, because I've never heard that intro before.
Well, you got to change it up once in a while, right? Just keep it fresh.
I love it.
How was your week?
My week was way more chilled than it should have been. As mentioned in the last episode, I recorded from the Kruger National Park, the banks of the Crocodile River, which borders the Kruger National Park. And I only got back from that mini vacation on Monday. And since Monday until now has been, it's been busy in terms of my contract work, but I haven't been able to get as much done this week as I would have liked to. I did chill a little bit in the evenings with the kids and stuff, and it was intentional because I felt like I was pretty stressed out and I needed a little bit less on my plate this week. How was your week?
Busy as usual. Still trying to get a hang of this app that I acquired called SurveyBot, and I don't know, like sometimes these SaaS businesses, or when you're trying to take over something brand new, you don't own, you didn't build the code base from scratch, which this is the first time for me. There's a lot of getting around. It could be a very kind of reactionary position that I put myself in, with customer, mm-hmm. you know, telling me, hey, how come this is not working, and reporting things and getting support requests. And I would say on a scale 1 to 10, I would say maybe it's a 6.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about in terms of being reactive and not proactive in your managing of the business that you've bought. I had that for, you know, the first couple of months that I took over WP Discussion Board, where I was just reacting to a whole bunch of stuff that was flying at me. And eventually what happened, I'd say after 6 or so months, I was able to anticipate what was going to come my way, because it's generally the same stuff. And I was able to manage that better. And it's tough, especially when you are unfamiliar with the code base, the piece of software, and you're still learning yourself as much as your customers are learning about it. So I know how you feel. It's a tough situation.
How many months would you say after you've taken over ownership that you feel that now this is everything is, you're getting the hang of things and that things are on control?
I would say for my specific case, it was around 6 months. But I still don't feel like I'm in full control. And it's been over a year now. There's still parts of the software that I'm unsure about. When I get customer support queries, I still need to dig into the code base to figure out what's going on. And I don't have a holistic picture of the plugin cemented in my head. So a customer will ask about a certain feature that in some cases I don't know even exists. And it takes work to go and figure that out. But that said, the support burden that I have these days compared to 12 months ago is so much lighter and easier. Not because I'm getting less requests, but because I am more familiar with the structure of the plugin. So I would say anywhere 6 to 12 months. But that first 6 months is super challenging. It's a lot of effort to figure things out and to learn what you've bought.
So how big is WP Discussion Board? Like, I don't know, like, what's a good mm-hmm. measure of scale? Like, lines of code, maybe? Even though it's like it's not a really good measure.
Lines of code, I would be lying if I gave you a number, but there's two parts to the plugin. Obviously, there's the free version and there's the paid version. The paid version is a lot bigger than the free version. I would say there's...
like tens of hundreds of thousands of lines?
No. I would say in the thousands. Okay. The free version is quite light. I'd say it's maybe about 30-ish files. And, you know, each file maybe between 100 and 500 lines of code. 500 being the longest and 100 probably being the smallest. It's probably smaller files than that. And the pro version just has a lot more files. I wouldn't know the counts off the top of my head, but it's a lot, and it's I still haven't wrapped my head fully around it, but I'm getting better with each day that passes and each support query that I need to answer.
So yeah, I wouldn't even know how many lines. I didn't do a count, but it's actually pretty big. There are right now, at least on my AWS bill is big.
yeah.
There are like different services. There's like, well, one database, one cache, three different types of quote unquote servers. Like one is for the web, one is for background jobs. One is some queuing server. So yeah, all in all, like it really does take quite a bit of time just to wrap your head around any one particular issue. And this is not considering all the services that it integrates with, right? Like Zapier, mm-hmm. Intercom, Stripe, all these different types, MailChimp, all these different types of services.
Yeah, I attempted to build, and I think I've mentioned this in a previous episode, but I attempted to build a SaaS application on top of WordPress. And what I found with a SaaS application was that there was a lot more stress involved, and there was a lot bigger sort of responsibility on my shoulders compared to just having a piece of software that somebody downloads and installs on their own infrastructure. Managing servers and processes and queues and, you know, all the stuff that comes with that is, it's a lot of work. And you've got the added responsibility that people are paying you for this. So if it goes down, it's a huge stress, and you need to be all hands on deck to get it back up. Whereas when you're essentially just selling a script in the form of a plugin, I feel there's a lot less responsibility. Make sure that, you know, that things are running as they should be. My biggest responsibility is if there is a bug in the code, and because the software is quite mature, there's very few bugs. Most of the support queries I get are implementations, like conflicts with themes and other plugins in WordPress. But if there is a bug, you know, that's obviously my biggest sense of responsibility, that I need to go in and fix that and release a new point release of the plugin. But with SaaS, you've got a whole lot more to worry about.
Yeah, for sure, because you have customers that are using your software month over month, right? That's kind of where the subscription comes in. And I guess that's why it commands a higher multiple. The skill set required to build one of these things and to manage is much higher compared to, let's say, if you want to build a WordPress theme or a Shopify theme. If people demand your theme, then you're going to get some revenue. It could go up and down, mm-hmm. right? And it's probably less repeatable compared to a SaaS, but it's a simpler approach. And at MicroConf, Rob Walling called this the stair-step approach, where he believes that an easy way for an entrepreneur to start on this path is not to straight away build a SaaS solution, because that's kind of hard mode, but rather start building something small, maybe an ebook, maybe something that you can sell, like a WordPress theme that is a one-time sale that requires no support or very little support. And as you learn the ropes of, you know, how to market something online, how to do SEO and how to create content, you slowly build up your skill set. And then you can move on to something that's maybe a subscription model that is simple. And then once you've kind of done that, then you can move on to something that's more complicated, like a full blown SaaS.
Yeah, sometimes I think about this quite often, because I think about creating information products and products that don't have support burden attached to them. And in a lot of ways, when I think about it, it seems like the simpler way to go, and not just simpler, but more advantageous, because you don't have all this burden of responsibility on your shoulders. Like, I question sometimes, like, does it make sense for me to be making software instead of selling information, for instance, in the form of courses? Software is my passion, and I believe that's why I do it. But, you know, during the hard times and tough weeks where I'm grinding away and customers are being customers and asking questions and, you know, frustrating me in certain ways, I often think to myself, like, wow, there's an easier path to this. I can make the same amounts of revenue, and in some cases more, just selling information where there's not this extra burden of responsibility. But I generally, like, when my train of thought goes down that direction, I kind of pull myself back and say, hey, like, there's a reason why I'm building software. I'm building it because it's a passion of mine and I enjoy the process. Yeah, the customer support is not great, but it's you know, that's part and parcel of putting something out there and selling something. So yeah, but I do think about it often, and it's actually came up this week while I was in the Kruger Park. I was thinking about this, and my brain started going down a path where, like, my big goal is to be able to do what I'm doing now full time, and I'm not at that point because WP Discussion Board doesn't make near enough to be able to support me and my family with three young kids. But I was thinking of ways, like, hey, how could I accelerate myself to go from where I am now to maybe in 3 to 6 months being able to do this full time? And then I went down the whole path of information products and stuff. But it also came, you know, as I thought about that, I came to the realization that there's an opportunity cost to be able to do that, to go into information products and spend my time, you know, trying to accelerate the process of going full time. And that opportunity cost is that I won't be able to A, do what I really enjoy doing, which is writing software, but B, is that I would have to invest time into building this product and building this information, like, resource, because I'm thinking about this as a kind of an information site with courses and that kind of stuff. I'd have to spend a huge amount of time doing that, and that's time that I wouldn't be able to spend on building my software and growing WP Discussion Board. And I fully believe that WP Discussion Board is primed right now to kind of take it to the next level, where it could easily become my full-time thing, but it's going to require a decent amount of work and development for me to get it there. So my current thinking is, at least the thinking that I continue to align myself with, is that I need to focus on WP Discussion Board, focus on one thing at a time, don't get distracted by other opportunities and other ideas. I've got something, it's working, I just need to grow it and scale it and improve it.
You brought up a good point, right? Because I definitely see that building information products would be more straightforward. So there are obviously there are pluses and minuses, right? So when I was attending MicroConf, there tends to be sort of separate groups of people. So ones are the ones that are trying to build or have built SaaS businesses. And then there's another group that are building info products, courses, membership sites. I guess, like, if you look at from a you know, buy, grow, repeat point of view, if you are truly a SaaS business, then you definitely command a higher multiple because your software is supposed to be giving value to its customers on a month-to-month basis, and it's not a one-off purchase. So there's this kind of repeatable model of a SaaS business that is highly valuable.
It is. I just think the realities of the marketplace, at least what I've seen, is that doesn't really translate that way. Like, the multiples that information products get, if you look at the kind of deals that I'm looking at, I'm not talking about, like, some sort of a unicorn or something like that. You know, small kind of small SaaS business versus a information product selling, you know, an ebook or something, and they're making the same amounts of revenue. In general, I've seen those, or even an affiliate site, like a content site where, you know, you're making revenue on affiliate sales. They're selling for the same multiples. I'm not seeing SaaS businesses getting higher multiples.
Oh, really? I'm surprised by that. Because from where, like, I look at these deals, the SaaS businesses are the ones that have the higher multiples. So just having a higher multiple doesn't mean that it's strictly better, because it might take you a longer time, right? In which you can, you know, churn out multiple info products.
So what kind of multiples are you seeing currently on SaaS businesses?
Well, currently it's pretty crazy, but in general, I think you can expect, you know, like a 2 to 5 times multiple on seller discretionary earnings, and it's for info products, it's definitely lower than that. Like, I would be surprised to see an info product going for 5 times multiple.
Yeah, I see 2 to 3 on most of the info products that I look at, and even affiliate sites as well. So
that sounds about right. affiliate sites, I would expect, yeah, anywhere from like 24 mm-hmm. months, or, well, basically two times to maybe three times. I don't even know. But so I always think the sweet spot is around like 28 months. A site is generating whatever, $1,000 worth of affiliate income. You pay around, mm-hmm. yeah, 24, 28K for that site. That's kind of what I see. And usually these affiliate sites, right, it's more dependent on the affiliate program and SEO. Yeah.
Search traffic. Yeah. And it's such a dangerous business to be in, because one Google algorithm update and your affiliate site can tank and you lose a lot of revenue.
Yeah. You can lose like 90% of revenue, right? Overnight.
Yep.
So that's what I mean, right? If you go with the same valuation to a SaaS business, they'll probably come back and say, well, you can't compare us to this other business, despite that we're generating the same level of revenue.
Except by taking on a SaaS business, I think more and more people are starting to realize that you're taking on a lot more. While the recurring revenue is better, there's more downsides to taking a SaaS business over an affiliate site. There's a bigger burden on yourself. There's a bigger sense of responsibility. There's technical knowledge that you need to have. And it's a lot more difficult versus, you know, taking an affiliate site over or an info product site. And I'm not advocating for either way. I think each person's scenario suits different types of businesses. But I think it's a lot easier, even though the risk is higher, it's a lot easier of something to take over. There's a lot of romanticism around SaaS because of that the recurring revenue. But what most people don't realize is that it's huge amounts of work and it's a lot of effort, and you are going to, yeah, definitely feel the weight on your shoulders.
Yeah, for sure. And it also depends on what type of, like, what the scale of the SaaS is, right? Because I've looked at different SaaS businesses, not just buying them, but I've built other SaaS businesses. There are like certain ones where you kind of just build it and you don't really have to touch the code base much. Right. So I definitely see the power of this SaaS engine, that once you get it going, once you've found that kind of nugget of value that the customers are finding every single month, they'll just keep paying, right, at the same rate.
Yeah. The same could be said about a membership site, though. A recurring, you know, if you can, like, there's a few businesses that I've seen recently where they essentially sell leads, and there's quite a few of these that have popped up, and there's people making like good money off of it. And it's a recurring monthly subscription, which is the same as your SaaS business. And on the back end, there's obviously some sort of a scraping tool to find leads, and maybe some sort of a formatting tool to create a monthly report that just gets sent out to the subscribers. And it's a lot less effort than a SaaS.
Yeah. I mean, there are good SaaS and bad SaaS as well, right? So not all SaaS is created equal.
Yeah.
There are ones where, you know, the switching cost is high, and that's when you get, you know, the high lifetime value of the customer base, right? Because the fact that, well, once you bring in their system, it's really, really hard to switch to something else, or the cost is prohibitively high.
Yeah.
Therefore, as a buyer, you look at that type of business, and you know that, well, next month is very likely that's going to make, you know, it's the same amount of revenue, and then the month after, and then the month after. That's why people are willing to pay a higher multiple, because they're buying this cash flow that they know it's going to still be there, or they bet it's going to still be there. And for affiliate sites, well, they don't have as much trust that,
absolutely,
you know, it could survive all these like Google updates and Amazon affiliate, you know, commission changes. Then that's why they would not value it as high.
Yeah. And each model has its own, you know, pros and cons. And, you know, like, maybe the middle between SaaS and information is membership sites, where you kind of got the best of both worlds. But, you know, I think the other thing to say is the grass is always greener on the other side. Like, it always looks better from the outside. And it's the same with, you know, people looking to buy into SaaS businesses. It sounds like this amazing thing, and this thing that's like, you know, hey, I'm just going to like get this monthly recurring income, and I'm going to have, you know, a few users on my site. But the realities of it is that it's quite difficult. That's not to discourage anybody from doing this. It's still worth it to do, but you've got to accept the responsibility that's going to be on your shoulders to run a business like this. And if you're willing to do that, it can you know, be something really great, and it can be something that turns out to be very financially rewarding as well.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, did you ship anything last week?
Well, I knew we were going to get to the segment, so I started thinking in my head, what can I say that I shipped? And unfortunately, there's very little that I can say. I expected this. I did mention in my update last week that this week was going to be a quiet week. Because I went away to the Kruger Park, I managed to put an offer on a piece of land, if that counts for anything, which I'm super excited about. But in terms of product developments, I really just handled customer support. So I had two queries that came in and kind of handled those. Nothing major, but I didn't get to do any development work. The one thing that I'm super excited about, and I've said this over a few episodes now, but it's like, it's really exciting to me, is that the sales for the plugin are really starting to climb. And I'm getting to the point where I've almost at the point where I've made my money back after a year. I would say another 2 to 3 months, and I would have made my initial investment back. But it's nice to see that growth, and I'm not actually doing too much. I've tweaked my marketing, as we've talked about in previous episodes. But once I start making deeper product changes, I'm going to see that the sales start to, you know, go even higher. But it's nice to have that growth and to be constantly hitting certain milestones that I wanted to hit and that I didn't expect to, but I factored into my initial valuation of the plugin. So yeah, I'm super happy about it, and I'm in a very comfortable position with it right now.
That's great. So there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Despite all the challenges that we brought up previously.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, for me, I'm in a similar situation. Last week, I mentioned that I want to clean up the AWS bill and do some load testing. And so one of them, at least, is I delegated to the contractor, because I noticed that, like, when I look at my AWS bill, there are so many things that I don't even know why I'm being charged for. Because I would go to an AWS region like Mumbai, and there are still like a couple of, it's a small charge, but the fact is that, like, you know, I shouldn't even be charged anything, right, in those regions. And I think it's partly is because previously the company that owned SurveyBot had employees in India. So I don't know, maybe they were doing something there. So there's some sort of snapshot that's still remaining. And the easy thing for me to do would be to just go in with a machine gun and just blow everything away. But you never know, right? Sometimes these things, there are certain repercussions when you just pull the plug on these things willy-nilly. So I'm still waiting for the contractor to come back with an audit of what I ought to remove. And speaking of that, actually the contractor is the original founder of SurveyBot. So he created it in 2017. And I actually did an interview recording with Liam. Liam is the original founder. And there's going to be an episode of me interviewing Liam on understanding the seller side, right? Being on the selling side of a deal. So we have to figure out a way or a date or release date to see when we want to release that episode. I think it's some really interesting content. Yeah, I just want to tease our audience to make sure that you subscribe to our podcast to not miss out on that really juicy episode.
Yeah, I unfortunately couldn't be there for the recording. I was super excited about it, and then last minute couldn't make it, unfortunately. But I can't wait to hear it myself. I haven't heard it yet. But based on what I've spoken to you about, Johnny, it sounds like it's going to be a really interesting episode. And I think we should release it sooner rather than later. I don't think we should leave it for too long, because it's fresh. It's about, you know, a business you've just bought. So it'll be nice to release that and have it out there.
Another thing that I did, which was like pretty positive, was so I mentioned before that there are a lot of tests for this for SurveyBot, which is good, right? Cause it means that, well, Liam originally, when he created it, he put in a lot of thoughts and attention to making sure there's good test coverage. So, but running the test was like taking a long time. But so what Liam helped me to do was to create this these things called like GitHub Actions. It's kind of one of the features on GitHub where you can push and it does a bunch of things like running tests and deploying to servers. And I had a pretty exciting moment this week when I was able to speed up kind of my deployment time from close to an hour down to like under 20 minutes because
wow.
I just switched a parameter and it was testing my code with like 8 different nodes. So I was able to parallelize the whole test suite. And yeah, it's like something like that. It's just, it's just wonderful, you know, cloud computing enables us to do, right?
Yeah, I remember I was previously on a project where we had to do a content migration for a massive international media brand. And we had to move the content, I'm talking maybe close to 500,000 articles with terabytes and terabytes of media. We had to move it in a 12-hour window. And I built out the process for moving the content from one CMS to WordPress. And I had to write all these scalable node scripts using Google Cloud Functions and scalable infrastructure to be able to move that content within that 12-hour window. So I scaled up like all the, you know, using Google Cloud, a whole bunch of different processes that move data all at this, you know, all at once and multiple articles with images and everything. It was quite a process, but it's incredible that you can just, you know, sit at like, for me, the bottom of the world here in South Africa and scale up massive computing power to move data and then just shut it down and pay such a small, you know, amount for that processing power.
Yeah, for sure. So other than that, I mean, going back to this acquisition of SurveyBot, for the past week, I would be running around trying to fix things. So last Friday, a customer would mention to me that like a fairly like basic function that the app is supposed to do. So he just wanted to, he created a survey that he wanted to hook up to a Facebook ad campaign, and he was just trying to preview the survey and it just wouldn't work. So I had to kind of look into the code and everything, and in the end I still had to rely on Liam to figure it out. And so I think when you inherit something, that's like one of the challenges, right? I probably spent like hours on Friday last week. And it's kind of frustrating sometimes because it's just something that you feel would be very fairly basic. But most of the time for me, it was just like learning the code base, right? Normally, you just go in, you kind of know exactly where to look at, and then you discover the problem. And most of the time, you know, you just go in and fix things right away. And when you inherit something, and there's the handoff is kind of flaky. It was a Friday, so Liam was in New Zealand, so it's already kind of past his workday. Yeah. So I was kind of left on my own, and I'm like, okay, so how do we fix this? And most of the time, it was just learning around the code base. I kind of know like where to look at, but still, it was kind of a frustrating experience.
Yeah, so you had to rely on Liam, but did you kind of find the issue yourself and then pass it over, or was it the situation where you actually just ended up not being able to find where the issue lied?
No, so I wasn't able to find it, and in the end, like, it was already kind of pretty close to the end of day, right, for my customer and myself. So I just left it, and I told the customer, right, like, this is what I was trying to do, and I gave him like a quick update, I think that's good enough, right? Because I think most people just want to know that you're looking into it, that they're not kind of speaking into the void, and nobody cares about, you know, their experience. So I just gave the customer an update at the end of the day, and then he was okay with it. And then I just waited until this week, and then it was fixed. So there were things like this and things like, you know, Stripe migration still kind of haunting me till this day, because when you switch over to a new Stripe, you have to create all these new subscriptions, and in the app, it actually looks at these subscriptions because it's a usage based thing, right? So it actually looks at, well, which plan are you on? how much responses are you, or units, let's call it them units, have you used up so far, and that determines whether you get upgraded to the next tier or not. So a customer was using it and he was kind of already ready to be upgraded to the next tier because it kind of blew past the quota, but it just never updated because
it was a new
Stripe subscription. So I'm like, well, that's too bad. I guess for the customer, it's okay, right? Like, I'm not charging him. but it's one of those things where there are all these like things that are dangling when you're migrating, when you're moving, that it's not super important. I mean, losing, you know, a couple of upgrades here and there is not like the end of the world, but it's still that time, that energy, that attention that it distracts you from, oh, I really want to focus on the marketing this week and focusing on, now the infrastructure is kind of stabilized. I want to move on to the thing that moves the needle. So when you have a bunch of these kind of small incidents, it gives you that feeling at the end of the week that you wonder whether you're moving the needle at all.
Yeah.
Like you're spending a ton of energy. You're creating all these docs and not, you know, you're creating knowledge for yourself, but you wonder like, did I move the needle enough?
Right? I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. And my only response could be that, like, just be patient with yourself and take it one step at a time, and don't expect everything to happen in a week, because I have that expectation of myself. I'm like, there's this massive list of things that I want to do, and I feel like I can do them, but realistically, like, it doesn't, by them not being done this week and kind of spacing them out, it's going to be no different. Like, I'm in this for the long term, and you've got to, you can easily stress yourself out very quickly by putting too much pressure on yourself. And I would encourage you not to do that and see it as a long-term thing. And, you know, growth happens over time. It doesn't happen overnight. So give yourself the space to first figure out the software and like work it in phases, you know, first become familiar, then move on to some of the market, the more important marketing stuff. And then, you know, prioritize. And I remember a few episodes ago, you did that kind of prioritization table. It might be worth it to relook at that and only focus on the extremely important high priority items right now. And just give yourself breathing room. Don't put pressure on yourself.
Yeah, that's good advice. Yeah. And SaaS, that's the beauty of SaaS, right? It compounds. That's what you said, right?
Yep.
And I think that's another thing that sort of is a reason why I'm putting pressure on myself, because I'm thinking, oh, if I can, you know, improve this by 10% today versus 10%, let's say next week, that compounding effect, right? It's gonna, so in a sense, I'm losing out on that compounding effect, because now that 10% growth is not going to come today, but it's going to come at a later point in time, right? So I'm always kind of chasing this imaginary ideal, right?
Yeah, and in reality, the way that it actually happens is, you know, like slowly, 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 and then all at once. So you got to go through the slowly, slowly, slowly phase, and that's where you're at now. Yeah. So accept it for what it is, and just be patient with yourself and continue. Just make sure you do a little bit every week, and if you can continue to do that, at some point, and you're probably not even going to notice it, suddenly it'll explode, and it'll be like, oh, wow, okay. You know, because I was just patient and, you know, became a little bit better every day, you get to the point where over time you're like, you're in a far better position. So yeah, I think you just need to be more patient. What about commitments for this week?
It's good that you reminded me to look at my prioritization board. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking at this like for the past 2 days because, well, yeah, whenever I feel that I'm kind of fuzzy with priorities. So right now the highest priority is still reduce server costs, which is being delegated to Liam. Product analytics, I was actually looking at this last night. This was like actually done before when I acquired it. So there were goals being set up to look at what users are doing, like whether how many people are creating new accounts, how many people are putting in their payment info and such. So right now I do have those numbers, but so one thing I've been also doing is sending out emails to those people that didn't convert, or just even sometimes they would pay, but they wouldn't, I don't see a lot of activity on their account. So I'll actually send out emails to follow up with them. Right now it's still manual, which is good actually, I think, because it could be personalized. So going back to what I aim to do this upcoming week, so I would say I really need to switch the pricing. So I've been looking at the old pricing that Liam put in that was kind of abandoned, and it was changed to this unit pricing. So I want to switch back to this tiered pricing. I'm not sure whether I will be able to complete the whole thing next week. So, but I guess what I can put, a stick in the ground and say, well, so next week I want to be able to send a URL to you, even though it could be like behind the login, or it's a separate URL, but you will be able to see the new tiered pricing at least being displayed at a URL that I specified that you can go check out.
Awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Is that going to be your only commitments, or you want to add anything?
I think that's one of the things that, yeah, it might not feel like it's a lot, but it's one of those things that it gives disproportionate outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. From my perspective, I'm going to be boring and recommit to what I committed to last week because I didn't get to it. And I want to finish that settings refactor. It's a big step for my plugin, and it's going to help users onboard easier. So I want to continue to work on that and have the themes page, all the settings for selecting the theme set out and migrated to the new data model that I've created for settings. So that is what I'm going to be working on. And then you reminded me about analytics. I set up some tracking a few commitments ago, probably 3 or 4, and I actually haven't reviewed them. So I want to review. I know one of the events isn't firing, so that one's going to be useless to me, but I want to see how it's working, if my conversions are being tracked in analytics, review that, and potentially add some new events on the website to track so that I can better understand how people are buying, where they're coming from, and optimize the process more.
Excellent. Do you want to do a sign off?
Yeah, sure. Show notes can be found at bygrowrepeat.com. I'm Matt Jerry on Twitter, and Johnny is Johnny Tong on Twitter. We'll see you next week.
See ya.